Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice Stephen R. Jensen presiding, is now in session.
You may be seated. Good morning. The first case set for argument this morning is South Dakota Citizens for Liberty, Inc. et al. Versus Rapid City Area School District. Kenneth Jasper is present and will be arguing on behalf of the appellants. And Emily Sorgowitz is present and will be arguing on behalf of the Rapid City Area School District. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Jasper, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. You'll get a two-minute warning with the yellow light when you're coming close to your argument time. So with that, Mr. Jasper, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel, and members of the gallery. What brings us here today is a difference of opinion. As we know in the practice of law, reasonable people can come to different conclusions. And in this case, it involves basically the interpretation of two words that were added in the 2019 session of the legislature, which we believe significantly changed the intent of the legislation up to that time. In this case, it was a declaratory judgment action brought in which specific relief was sought, as well as in the complaint under the sixth paragraph, we ask for an additional such other and further equitable jurisdiction to which the plaintiffs would be entitled. And originally, the request was just for specific, but then when it was briefed for the trial court, we added the two additional comments, which I think are not nearly as significant as the part on the interpretation. Anyway, the trial court, or I should say the parties, agreed to submit summary judgment motions simultaneously. They were briefed thoroughly, all the arguments for the trial court. We submitted our statement of undisputed material facts, which basically were not in any significant way contested. The defendant, the school district, they submitted theirs, which we took issue on several things, which I think are important. But we may or may not get into that. Anyway, the words we're talking about here are regularly scheduled. What comes to mind immediately is if something is regularly scheduled, apparently there's an irregular way of scheduling things as well. And that's where the parties disagree. If we look at SDCL 125.1, two places in the statute, it contains the words regularly scheduled official meeting. Official meetings were described in the 2019 legislation under 125.12. The parties all agree that regularly scheduled official meetings are nowhere defined in the statutes. The district argues, and we don't disagree, regular meetings of the school district are scheduled under 13.8.10.
Council, so when we look at 125.1, there is a provision in 121 that refers to 125.1 that refers to regularly scheduled official meetings, which are designated as regular meetings by statute, rule, and ordinance.
That's
correct.
I
think that appears to be the argument that the district is making. So why isn't that the defining language for that clause that is used in that statute?
Well, specifically, Your Honor, 13.10.8 says regular meetings are to be scheduled at the annual meeting, which is in July. Regular meetings are to be scheduled throughout the year. Then when we look under 125.1.1, it talks about how meetings are scheduled.
Well, doesn't that talks about how meetings are noticed, doesn't it?
Noticed, yes, and noticed is also scheduling, is it not? That's our contention, because what the statute says, you provide notice in the following manner, etc., for all regular meetings. Then the very last sentence states, in continued or, I shouldn't say continued, but rescheduled or special sessions, you comply with the above requirements to the extent possible under the circumstances, which to me indicates that's what an emergency would require. And if we look at the schedule that was prepared by Ms. Weaver of all the meetings that were held and what was the purpose, basically the only time that there was what I would call an emergency, as I recall, was when there was a boiler problem at one of the schools. I think it was Canyon Lake Elementary School. That's something that requires immediate action. You don't have time to do all the normal scheduling, which is what 25.1 at the beginning talks about. And then under when there's an emergency situation, which would be a very special meeting, you don't need all those requirements because the circumstances dictate you need immediate action. All the other meetings are scheduled, as it was pointed out by, excuse me, Kate Thomas, when the issue became before the school district, she indicated, you know, we have our normal business meetings twice a month, and then on every other Monday, we have all these other meetings.
Is there, I didn't see it in the record, but please help me if I missed it. Is there a board rule or a rule that pertains to how special meetings are scheduled or scheduled?
No, the only rule that I'm aware of is a district policy. And district policy says we have regular meetings and then we can call special meetings either by the board chairman or president or by several of the members of the district board. But other than that, I don't recall there is any, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
But what it comes down to, excuse me, is 13A10 talks about these other meetings and how they're scheduled. But what has always been the practice is they schedule all these other meetings in the same way, or notice all these other meetings in the same way they notice the regular meetings required by 13A10. So, and what we have is, I think it's Exhibit H on the in our brief, we have a schedule of all the meetings that were held, and this is a copy without all the yellow indication that's in the file, indicating when meetings were held, what their purpose was, whether or not public comment was provided for. And if you notice, beginning in 2018, at the beginning, all the meetings, yes, the public was permitted to attend and add public comment. But public comment changed in 2019, sometime after the 2019 legislation, which added the two words that are in dispute, essentially. That's when they changed the procedure and started denying public comment at all these other meetings. Now, what's significant is their policy, and that's policy BEDH, specifically provides that all regular and special meetings of the board will be open to the public. And so consequently, even if the statute 125.1 doesn't apply, their own board policy requires public comment but through the open forum at all meetings. And that's one of the points we added when we did our brief to the court. So even if the statute doesn't control, still they violated their own policy, which under this court's prior decisions, it has their policies have the force and effect of law. So if there's any dispute there, they're still violating their own policy.
So to appeal from an alleged violation of a board policy, you're looking at 1346.1?
Yes, that's...
And are you a person aggrieved? Do you have standing?
I believe we do, Your Honor.
Taxpayer standing? Is it standing because individuals live in the district, that they have a child in school in the district?
There's children involved in the district, yes, Your Honor.
And is that a question of first impression as to whether or not that would constitute a status as an aggrieved person?
I think it could, Your Honor, but I think irrespective of that, Declaratory Judgment Action 2124 specifically says even if you have another avenue, you don't have to pursue that avenue. You can do it through a declaratory judgment action, which is what the trial court ruled. It could be done through a declaratory judgment action. And in this case, the district did not file a notice of review, therefore I don't think that issue is really before the court, but that's certainly up to the court to consider.
Why would we allow that, though? Why would we not permit some sort of exhaustion requirement or something like that that requires somebody who's adversely impacted by a decision to pursue their statutory remedy of appeal, which may or may not carry with it a particular standard of review? Why would we, if we were just to allow declaratory judgment actions to do service for those appeals, why would we even have an appeal statute for those sorts of decisions?
Well, I believe in reviewing all the declaratory judgment decisions of this court says you do not have to, under all circumstances, review the alternative methods of resolution of your complaint. And in this case, we think it would have been irrelevant anyway because under the policy, the school's policy, you have to go through these very formal proceedings, and then at the end, if there's no resolution, you're without a result. And consequently, declaratory judgment, we feel, is the only really applicable method in pursuing the relief requested in this case.
Counsel, the one thing that I'm still not quite clear on is I understand your arguments with regard to the public comment, the ability for the public to comment. But then your last provision where I think you indicated you feel might be a little less important, what declaratory relief are you seeking with respect to this event that occurred where the board in executive session, as you have alleged, made a determination that you feel should have been made on the record and not in executive session? It's not clear to me what exactly you're requesting by way of declaratory relief as it relates to that.
Okay. We're asking that this court declare, number one, that there was a violation of the open meetings law. Specifically, what happened is they went into an executive session.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'd rather you not waste your little bit of time left here on the facts, but on the legal argument and what it is you're requesting and how that would be something that is justiciable under a declaratory action.
A declaration that they did, in fact, violate the open meetings law, Your Honor. And they did so because they took official action.
And then it appeared to me that you were not requesting any remedy with regard to that, just a declaration that what they did was improper.
Was in fact illegal, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and how is that a judicial controversy that would be suitable to declaratory relief?
Well, in theory, if they're guilty of that, they're subject to a class 2 misdemeanor. We're not asking for that they be punished for a class 2 misdemeanor. Just we feel a declaration saying you need to follow the law and the policies is what.
Well, but that's different. A forward-looking declaration saying here's what the policy is and here's what you must do would be more, seems to me to be more in line with a declaration of what the party's rights and so forth are underneath a statute. But that's a little different than a declaration saying what you did in the past was improper, but then you're not asking for any particular remedy.
Well, so if I may make an analogy to a criminal case, you're declared having violated a statute, you're guilty. then it is up to the judge or the court in its discretion on what punishment, if any, to administer. And consequently, we feel that's an appropriate declaration indicates you not to do that anymore. And consequently, that should have the effect that we think is desired. Hold public officials accountable for their actions. And a declaratory judgment will do that.
Mr. Jasper, can I return you to the spot where you began? And I want to make sure I've got your argument correct. You would read the text regularly scheduled to be scheduled in conformity with the notice requirements.
That's correct, yes.
And that's for you regular, that satisfies that regularly scheduled text that you identified earlier.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. I see I don't have much left, but you know, I'd certainly be willing to entertain any other questions in my remaining 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jasper. Ms. Swergiewicz, you may proceed with the arguments.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. Mr. Jasper and I seem to agree on what the central issue is before this court, which is that the center of this appeal is a straightforward one and turns on the question of whether or not SDCL 125.1 is plain, clear, and unambiguous. We believe that the trial court correctly held that SDCL 125.1 only mandates public comment at regularly scheduled official meetings. If you look at the statute, Mr. Jasper did a nice job kind of explaining that in 2019, pursuant to Senate Bill 91, they added those two words, regularly scheduled. But I think equally important is the last sentence of that fourth paragraph of the statute, which says, at a minimum, public comment shall be allowed at regularly scheduled official meetings, which are designated as regular meetings by statute, rule, or ordinance. Here, we have a statute in the school board chapter, I would direct the court to 13.8.10, that talks about what a regular meeting is. In order to find for the appellant, this court would have to do one of two things. They would either have to add words to SDCL 125.1 by saying special meetings and regularly scheduled official meetings, or remove words by taking out regularly scheduled and leaving just official meetings, which would then include special meetings.
So is your argument contemplate that regularly scheduled official meetings are the same thing as regular meetings?
I'm sorry, one more time, Your Honor.
Regularly scheduled official meetings are regular meetings.
Regularly scheduled official meetings are regular meetings, yes.
And regular meetings aren't just a subset of regularly scheduled official meetings? They're the only exclusive type of regularly scheduled official meetings that 125.1 talks about?
Yes. When you look at 13.8.10,
sorry to interrupt. Why would it say at a minimum then?
Because I think what the legislature was trying to do was clarify, and if you look at the Senate bill comments that Mr. Jasper included in his briefing, I think the legislature was trying to clarify the minimum requirements for public comment, and that's why they used those specific words.
Can we look to that without finding it to be ambiguous?
We think that's unnecessary, because we think that this court's clear jurisprudence is if the words of the statute are clear, no, you don't have to look at legislative history.
Go ahead, please. No, please, by all means, go ahead.
I just want to clarify that under your view, at a minimum then, under 13, well, I'll take out the word minimum, under 13.8.10, there's only one regularly scheduled meeting required a month under this statute. So conceivably, the Rapid City School District could have one meeting a month with public comment, and that would be the extent of it.
Yes.
That's your view.
Yes. And the importance of that, because we're in the context of an open meeting laws, is that that's the only meeting where official action is taken. So 2 points. First, the public is allowed to come to special meetings. They're currently broadcast online and recorded too, and the public is allowed to come. Anything, same with board retreats, which are kind of the two study sessions, and board retreats are the two terms you'll see throughout the briefing as to what our special meetings are. The public are welcome at both of those, and no official action is taken at those meetings until the regularly scheduled official meeting, which is the only place that the board gets to take action. And at that point, it's undisputed that the public gets to comment.
I'm not so sure that you're, and I'm curious about your thoughts, that your interpretation doesn't also contemplate rewriting that paragraph of 125.1, that fourth one. Because what I hear your argument to posit is that it should read, a public body shall reserve at every regularly scheduled, every regular meeting public body a time for comment. So, in other words, it seems to me I've done a terrible job with it, but it seems to me that your argument is that you would take out regularly scheduled official meetings and just substitute regular meetings in there.
I think that's exactly what that last sentence of the fourth
paragraph. But why didn't they do that? I mean, that would be rewriting the statute as well.
Kind of, if the last sentence wasn't there. I think that directly points this court to what a regular meeting is set by a statute, which then brings us to 13.8.10.
Why would you even put in the words at a minimum? Why wouldn't you just start the sentence with public comment shall be allowed
at regular meetings?
Because I think that's what the legislature was trying to do is, I mean, we're in open meeting laws statutes. The public is allowed to, at a very minimum, on public bodies like school boards, have public comments at those regularly scheduled meetings.
Would you agree with me, just as a matter of whatever, syntax or grammar or whatever, that regularly scheduled official meeting is different than a regular meeting?
As a matter of grammar, sure.
Regular meeting is sort of a noun phrase, right? And regularly, as it's used in 125.1, it describes how something is scheduled. It doesn't necessarily suggest that it's a regular meeting. It just says this is how it's scheduled. That's sort of the phrase that we have to work with, it seems to me. Your argument, you would read them in interchangeably. What justification is there for reading those dissimilar portions and phrases of text to be the same thing?
I mean, I agree with you, Justice. I think this is, we don't have an appeal if that says at every regular meeting. But I think if you look at what the statute used to say in 2019 and that the
she keeps telling us it's unambiguous.
I agree, it's unambiguous, but it's still an issue that's before this court by virtue of the briefing. The legislature added regularly scheduled, and they also added that last statute that talks about where you find the definition of a regular meeting.
How does your own board policy fit in to this analysis? So the language in 125.1 refers to by statute, rule, or ordinance. So are you in agreement that then your board policy, would that fit in with the rule part of that? And does the board policy that pertains to open forum being required at both regular and special meetings, how does that play into this analysis in your view?
So we believe that 125.1 specifically points to the statute, but I also agree with Mr. Jasper that a school board policy has the force of law under this court's jurisprudence. Two things. Number one, I don't think that in his declaratory relief sought, and that's a settled record 27 to 28, he asked for seven things, marked as six, but I think he asked for seven things. He doesn't ask the circuit court to declare that the school district violated its own policy. So, first of all, the court didn't rule on that issue, and I don't think that it was properly before the court. Irregardless of that fact, we believe that district policy BEDH, you can comply with both, right? BEDH says, and Mr. Jasper cited to this in the record too, all regular and special meetings of the board will be open to the public. Undisputed that occurs. At meetings, a specific time period will be designated as open forum. A time limit may be set both for individual speakers and the length of open forum time period. So it's our position that that policy, when read in conjunction with 125.1, allows the school district to eliminate open public comments at those special meetings and that we're not in violation of that statute.
Can you describe how the special meetings are scheduled?
Yeah, so the special meetings are specifically, again, defined by 13.8.10. They're held at the call of the president or in the president's absence by the vice president. For some context, special meetings are just like the dictionary definition would imply, for a specific purpose. So when the school district is contemplating a 10-point grading scale or the Pathways program, when the school board feels like it needs more discussion or investigation about a particular subject, they're all subject-oriented, that's when it calls special meetings, most of the time called by the president.
And from the looks of things in the record, they're held with a frequency of usually about 2 to 3, but maybe 1 to 3. It looks like December sometimes is a little lighter. But they're held every month.
Yes, we completely agree. They're held frequently. But
do you agree that the special meetings, as the ones that we're talking about, at least in this case, are also official meetings?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. They are held frequently, and I don't think that that's a disputed fact, but we would, again, just draw the court back to the statute as to what a regularly scheduled meeting
is. So then your argument must contemplate that 13.8.10 is the only way to schedule a meeting. Because that's the, as you know, the annual meeting statute that says, hey, at this point and at this meeting, we set the regular meetings for the year. That must then, if I'm hearing your argument correctly, be the only way that a regularly scheduled meeting can be created.
Yes, that's right.
There's no other way.
That's right.
Even if they held one every third Monday, like clockwork, for every month throughout the year, but they just did it on a more of an ad hoc basis, and they didn't do it at that annual meeting.
Right, that would not be a regularly scheduled meeting defined by the statute. It would be a meeting that they might have somewhat regularly, but in our view, that's not the standard.
What textual support is there for the idea that regularly scheduled has to be read that way? You can only regularly schedule something if you set it at that one meeting in July. You have one chance to do it. If you don't do it, there are no other regularly scheduled meetings throughout the year.
Mr. Jasper and I agree that those phrases aren't defined in this court's jurisprudence, which is why in our briefing we referred to the plain and ordinary meaning of those words.
Could you address your opposing counsel's argument as to the other type of relief that he is requesting pertaining to the actions in executive session, and whether or not that's something that this court could address under a declaratory judgment action?
Certainly, Justice. We think that issue is not squarely before this court. We don't. It's never been clear what exactly the appellants were looking for, in part because there's a specific remedy laid out in the open meetings laws about what happens when you believe that there's been a violation. You go to the state's attorney's office. The state's attorney's office received an informal complaint first. They then did an investigation. At that point, the state's attorney is vested with the authority to investigate the alleged violation, refer it to the open meeting commission, or find that there was no violation. And that's exactly what happened here. It was referred to then state's attorney Mark Vargo. He did an investigation, issued a formal opinion, and then instead of pursuing that route, we find ourselves in a declaratory judgment action. But I agree with your comments that really they're not looking for a declaration going forward about what an interpretation of a statute looks like. What they're really looking for is a declaration that a law was violated. And that's exactly what the procedure in the open meetings laws is for.
Well, and then his other argument, which does have support in some of our cases that refer to the fact that a declaratory judgment action can be sought even if there are other remedies available. So why would this scenario be one where that would not be afforded?
I think, obviously, this court, I think, in theory, has the jurisdiction, but just based on the procedural posture of how we got here, There was no discovery done in this matter. Mr. Jasper and I agreed that we could just submit this on motions for summary judgment based on the statutory interpretation question that's before this court. So truly, we haven't done any discovery on that issue to the extent that the circuit, it wasn't properly before the circuit court, and that's what Judge Feifley ruled, and I think that that is the sound way to resolve that issue.
I think the issue, I know your time is waning, is the issue concerning compliance with the board's own internal policies or rules properly before us?
No, we do not believe that Mr. Jasper asked the circuit court for any sort of declaration regarding the board's policy.
What about its cognizability as a declaratory judgment action versus an appeal under 1346.1?
Again, we think that the proper procedure was not properly followed here. There is a remedy for a board policy violation, and that was not followed by the appellants.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. We respectfully request that this court affirm the circuit court's ruling. Thank you for letting us spend Election Day in Pierre.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Jasper, you may proceed with your five-minute rebuttal.
Thank you. I want to correct Counsel on one point. She stated that they don't take any action in these special meetings. I want to direct your attention to Exhibit H specifically. If we look on 1-5-21, January 5th, 21, a special meeting, no public participation allowed. The board voted on two action items. They took action at a special meeting. She says they never do that. Again, if we look on March 1, 2021, that was a special study session, one of these hybrid ones, if you will. Again, the board voted on an action item. And to further back up what I had stated earlier in relation to the one special meeting, which we called an emergency session, and that would have taken place on December 14th of 2021. That was a special executive session, and that addressed the Canyon Lake boiler situation where action was recommended. So, again, they violated their what she says it didn't happen, the record, which they don't dispute the accuracy of this exhibit, shows that they did not, that they did, in fact, take action at these special meetings, and she says they don't.
Counsel, how does that impact the statutory interpretation issue here? I mean, if that, in fact, occurred, then that seems to be something that then you would file the complaint through the existing grievance procedure, correct?
One could, but one, again, as earlier, declaratory action does not require you to pursue all these additional remedies.
Well, but you're not asking us here today to declare other violations of these. Okay.
No, just what has happened in the past is, in fact, a violation. That should have the same effect as any criminal law. You're not supposed to do that. Then again, they indicate we didn't ask the circuit court to address these things. We did, in fact, brief it to the circuit court. I believe it was thoroughly briefed. And when it comes to the state's attorney, he said, I don't find a violation because this was, in quotes, a straw vote, therefore no action. But in fact, the letter they sent out said, we took this action to appoint, we're going to appoint this person to fill this vacancy. And that letter was signed both by the superintendent and the president of the board. And that letter went out the day after this meeting, but the formal notice to the public didn't occur until 4 days later at another meeting when they announced we took this action, but it happened in executive session, which is prohibited.
So, Mr. Jasper, can I come back to that first statutory construction issue with you? So am I right in thinking that terms like hybrid meeting, study session, retreat for that matter, those are all local terms? Those aren't, I mean, we're talking about some sort of special meeting, right? Those fit under the category of special meeting, or at least that seems to be the position of your opponents.
That's the district's position, yes.
One of the things I see from your argument, and you could just confirm or not on this, but it seems to me that an underlying theme is that you're somewhat skeptical that these special biddings are really all that special.
That's correct. Because they're routinely, regularly, if you will, scheduled, basically like clockwork. As Kate Thomas pointed out at the hearing, and we have the transcript of that board meeting in the record. Now, there is a question about whether or not we believe these words are ambiguous. We do. Regularly scheduled is ambiguous because if you look at how they're scheduled, it's done regularly. But they argue, no, the only regular ones are the ones that are under 13.8.10.
Is that ambiguous, or do we just have to figure it out because there's no statutory definition?
Well,
or does it really matter to you?
Well, in part it doesn't matter, but when we look at 125.1.6, that talks about public participation when it's a teleconference. And it talks about public participation and listening, and then later in the same statute it talks about listening only. So participation, what other participation can the public have other than to make public comments? If all you're doing is listening, you're not participating. You're merely an observer. But if you're making comment, then you're participating. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
I want to thank the attorneys for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.